Good morning. I'm Joe Woody, the Chief Executive Officer of Avanos. With me today is Steve Voskuhl, our Chief Financial Officer, and Dave Crawford, our Vice President of Investor Relations and Treasury. We're going to open the line to questions as well as questions in the room, and I believe we have about 25 minutes. Thank you.
You weren't ready.
I knew you'd have a question. Yeah, I'm pleased with the progression. We talk about the relationship we have with lighters. It's a sole source relationship for filling the pumps. That's progressing for us. If you go on the website with the FDA and or Pfizer, you'll see that ropivacaine is back at 100%. That's utilized in 70% of the procedures for on-cue, although we have told investors that we expect Q2 to still be somewhat of an issue of supplying ropivacaine because the McKessons and Cardinals of the world are working through their backlogs, but it is appearing to get better. That said, 30% of the business is bupivacaine, which is still on backlog and not released. Of the fillers, the greater majority of the pump fillers do have regulatory issues, so lighters is one of the only pump fillers that is up and running with a good track record to date with the FDA, and just has come off of recent FDA inspection that went well. The business in general we're very happy with, and there's several hundred orthopedic surgeons that we've converted this year that are ready to go as we get supply back. In some cases, we're seeing accounts come from Exparel to us, and we're anxious to get back to what was successful in that business, which was teaching procedures in the orthopedic space around the adductor canal, also focusing on C-section and opioid-free deliveries, as well as hysterectomy. And we're evaluating rib fractures. So we're ready to go, excited about progressing. And I think as we get into the second half of 18, we'll primarily be through all of this. Obviously, there'll be some benefit from year-over-year comparators in H2. But generally, we've said this is a solid mid-single-digit growing business for us, and we have the opportunity to influence that greater.
And so we talk about, I guess, using kind of 2Q as the benchmark for when things start to get better. I mean, it sounds like you're starting to see early roots of it getting better now.
Yeah.
Is it 2Q is when it becomes significant enough to notice a number? What is the 2Q?
So I'll say a couple things. So I can see Steve is eager to say a couple things, but just even though it's negative growth at the moment, we are seeing progress throughout the quarter, so we'll see progress again in Q4, and we anticipate in Q1 as well. But you look like you want to
say something. Yeah, I would just say, we want to be cautiously optimistic about when that comes back. If you think about when the drug supply issue started, it also took 4 or 5 months for it really to start to impact at the level where at the hospital pharmacy level. And so our expectation is now as that course reverses for ropivacaine, it's going to take, again, several months, maybe into the second quarter, before we start to see or physicians start to see and hospital pharmacists start to see that recovery.
Is it possible to have a sense of how much the McKessons of the world have in backlog or how they get prioritized first? Or I guess what's the visibility on when you guys get better?
It's really for us, it's mainly our dialogue with the customers. That information is not that readily available to the manufacturers. But we can tell by what we see with our local customers that we're going to be working our way back towards Q2 pretty good.
Yeah, and one thing to remember is we're not actually a customer of any of these drugs, and so it's really our patients and third parties, and so we don't have that sort of visibility that they might have.
Thank you. In the room? Yeah, we think we get back to mid-single digit without supply or regulatory disruption quite readily, and we obviously also believe we can build from there. And we were saying that obviously, and watching the trajectory of the business prior to any supply disruption, we were on that type of trajectory, and we're investing in the business as well. Sorry, I'll come back to you.
Learnings do you have from the Exparel launch
So what I think is different this time around from that launch is the business was a division embedded in a large consumer company, and then it was spun out, and there was the S&IP business, which was having trouble and was the big focus of the business. The investment level wasn't the same. The people weren't the same. The strategic marketing, the focus on Dr. Canal was different. If you think about when Exparel came out, they focused on total knee because at the time, femoral block, which promotes quad weakness, was really kind of the state of the clinical direction. That's different now. I think also customers have had a chance to understand that all of these products, including Heron, can't solve the full problem. So not many people know that ONQ is used oftentimes in conjunction, you know, with Exparel. So a patient might receive several injections of Exparel, but then also get the ONQ catheter and then go home with the ONQ. The other thing, if I just thought real specifically for those that are listening in total knee repair, getting the patient up and walking quickly and having them recover more quickly and have 5 days of pain relief and have that titratable or managed by the patient is really important. So the clinicians have had time to understand the limitations and the positives, frankly, of all the different technologies. And I've said it, I'll say it again, I think, you know, this is a $4 billion market. I think it's actually healthy that Heron comes into the market. They're going to have a different approach with a gel that's very differentiated than the Exparel approach, and it might have some positives and it may have some negatives, but at the end of the day, it's a market where we each have different positives, and we're really bullish on the growth we can achieve. I know I'm forgetting to repeat the questions. I'm getting a little message back there, so I'll repeat the questions after you state them. Anybody else in the room? So what we've talked about and shared with investors, the question was, you know, the growth of COOLIEF is that it's a high double-digit grower. We've not been specific about the numbers. We see that continuing, but the greater base of the business today is really the spine, shoulder, and the hip. The new portion of the business that we're excited about will be the osteoarthritis treatment for knee osteoarthritis, and then getting that CPT code in January of 2020. Again, it opens us up after this study against hyaluronic acid, which we feel is going to be very strong in our performance for a year or more of pain relief, to a billion-dollar market in the U.S. So we'll be gearing up for that to obviously enhance that. That said, the progression that we've had in that business looks to me like it has a good runway and sustainability because there's so much more opportunity for us to place capital, and we see that increasing. So it's sort of a two-part story, which is maintaining the growth that we've had, high double-digit growth, but a chance to get to an exponential, or I've outlined it as a catalyst for our total business.
Yeah, I would maybe just add, if you kind of talk strategically, you know, we're marching towards a 2020 CPT code for that business, first one that we've ever had. And so you think about three points of convergence. One is building the clinical evidence. So in 2018, we spent 50% more on clinical studies than we had before. We will do that again in 2019. We're building out the sales force, again, in COOLIEF so that we have a well-trained, well-sized team ready to take that CPT code and be aggressive there. And then finally, we're going to continue to raise patient and physician awareness. So 2018 was the first time we did that on television, a number of markets across the U.S. For 2019, we're going to expand the number of markets, and we're going to go to larger markets. And so when you take those three points of investment, all converging on 2020 when we really think there's the big growth opportunity there with both the CPT code and bringing along the private pay reimbursement at the same time.
And just to pick up on Steve's comments, because he did mention the clinical studies, I think what's important for investors to understand, you know, we're doing a study against standard RF, which is going to be important to show the difference there. We're going to be reporting out in 2019 the study on hyaluronic acid. We're also doing more of a mechanism of action or duration study where we'll have a lot of data and look back at how long the pain relief is lasting. We feel really positive about that. So all of these are data points that are going to lead to certainly, I think, important information for clinicians, but equally as important will be for the private payers that we have a conversation with about coverage. And then, of course, having a CPT code for Medicare in the OA space, it's a different dialogue than with the private payer. So it's obviously a business doing well, but it's a business that can do much better as the clinical studies are developed. So we had a question about how large the Cool Leaf business is. We don't disclose the size of the Cool Leaf business, but we do disclose the growth of the business.
Sure. Maybe just to take a real macro standpoint. So when you include the Game Ready acquisition that we did in 2018, the overall portfolio is roughly 50-50 between chronic care and pain. Within pain, roughly two-thirds is going to be on the acute pain side, which includes OnQ.
Any more questions in the room? And I'm not sure if we're taking any questions from the webcast. No, we're not.
Yeah, if you could just give a little bit of directional commentary on the operating income as a baseline going into 2019. A lot of moving parts this year between the divestiture, you know, the TSA costs. You talked about, you know, the progression of cost savings. And you've also been investing pretty significantly in the growth driver. So what's the kind of like a right pro forma baseline. When you think about next year, do the cost savings offset the incremental step up in investments?
Yeah, maybe I can.
Go ahead. No, I'll add to it. Yeah.
So as we close out this year, and we aren't sharing results yet here, we'll be doing that at the end of February. But you'll have two clean quarters, relatively clean quarters, post the separation with SNIP, and I think that represents a reasonable baseline, you know, if you kind of look at a starting point. Inside that baseline is the full impact of the dyssynergies that we have talked about in the past, so that's layered into that. As you then kind of look ahead, okay, what's going to change in 2019? You saw on Joe's slide the impact of the cost savings year over year. That's the $7 to $10 million. That will be in the plan for 2019. That will touch cost of sales. That will touch OPEX, et cetera. Against that, we will be reinvesting for growth, largely in the Cool Leaf areas that we talked about. And for the first time ever, we'll have probably more than $10 million of investment, not all incremental, but going into that Cool Leaf breakout strategy. We'll also be putting some infrastructure into the international business that Joe talked about earlier. So how that will net out, we'll share more when we provide the guidance, but you can expect to see cost savings and a portion of which will be used for incremental reinvestment, particularly on Cool Leaf.
And I guess the dyssynergies, I mean, the 7 to 10 for 2019, is that's net of any continued dyssynergies?
That's right. So that's assumed that the dyssynergies are layered in by the time we finish the year in the fourth quarter, and then that 7 to 10 is now working back from that. That's right.
Thank you. Other questions?
You also talked about just the progression for international, low single digits, mid single digits, high single digits, double digits. It's pretty impressive, you know, how quickly, I guess, you've been able to move the needle there. Just how about what exactly
Yeah, a couple things. I mean, one of the reasons that we promoted Arjun Sarkar is he did a really nice job for us in Asia Pac. I've known of him from the days when I worked at Covidien. He was equally successful with their Asia-Pac business there. And if you look back at what he did with Asia-Pac, he got real focused and connected with customers. He got very focused on where to deploy investment, where he could get the best return, and focus in geographies, really connecting with the marketing teams in the U.S. and standing up for what the customer needed. He's also implemented a more rigorous approach to the commercial delivery and what's creating the underlying demand, despite the fact that 70% of our business is through distributors. So what you've seen this year is a progression from low single digit in 2017 to sort of what was likely to be mid single digit in 18, and then we really feel strongly about a plan for a high single next year. And then double digit, and then the opportunity around that that he'll be working on is the consolidation of distributors, channel consolidation, going direct in those focus areas that were on my slide in the presentation. And I think just connecting the organization, for those of you that have been involved in a company of our size, and sometimes it can be very U.S.-centric and not connected to customers in Europe, or in Latin America, or in Asia, making that connection so that it's an important part of what our franchise leaders do, and that they are connected with those customers. And I think the biggest opportunity, though, is creating underlying demand through a direct presence and taking these clinical studies and putting them into the markets and these technologies in the markets. But you're right. You know, it's roughly $130 million business for us today that we feel we can get to a double-digit grower. That's why I sort of identify it as one of the catalysts in our business alongside of COOLIEF and the acute pain conversion of surgeons for our organic growth. Yeah, the question was about other pump providers. Are we seeing share pickup and account pickup? And in fact, we are. It's not just because of the regulatory issue, but certainly that has something to do with it. And obviously, we have the unique relationship with Leiters, and at the moment, there are not a lot of other sources. But I think it's also customers looking at the sort of the total package, the clinical studies we have, over 100 clinical studies, 41 of them focused on an ability for us to take opioid levels down as part of the post-surgical treatment process. And then just the cadaver workshops that we're running and the medical education, injecting that into this business has really changed the profile. So I think over time, we've done some of it already, but over time there's opportunity for some share there. I mean, I think we would look at maybe not all cash, but it depends on the size of the transaction. I had this discussion in a one-to-one this morning prior to the presentation. With these level of transactions that we're talking about, even though they're larger for us, that still leaves us with a lot of powder. You know, if not half, maybe more than half of the powder will be generating significant cash flow going forward. So making a slightly larger acquisition that is transformational for our business is not going to prohibit us from going any further.
Yeah, and in the past we've had a little bit more leverage, particularly when we did the CorPak acquisition a few years ago, and then quickly brought that back down into a lower leverage range. So I'd say we're comfortable within a range on leverage. It's not so much managing the balance sheet as it is trying to fund the growth of the business on the M&A side.
So, in Q3, we obviously reported a 65% gross margin, and we highlighted some things like a tax treatment and a stock treatment in the business, and we committed to the lower 60s going forward in the business. Obviously, around the cost component that we laid out in the presentation, there's a lot happening around that. We're committed to what we've laid out. We're not today taking that up any higher. Obviously, something that could be a dynamic change to that would be the right kind of M&A that brings a better gross margin than we have in our base business today. And obviously, if it's significant and growing significantly, that's an impact as well. I don't know if you want to add anything.
Yeah, I think you have low 60s migrating over time to mid 60s, some of that from top-line mix, some of that from cost takeout, consistent with what Joe presented earlier. Yeah, when you look at the margin, okay, start at the gross margin side. The chronic care gross across portfolio, strong gross margins. We've said in the past the lowest in our portfolio is respiratory, high market share, but relatively less differentiation in some respects. But the rest of the business is very strong, above the average. And then as you drop down, of course, the mix starts to change. We have more R&D that gets deployed and clinical that gets deployed against the pain businesses than we do against the chronic care side of the portfolio. So as it moves from gross margin down to operating margin, it shifts around a little bit.
I think the important thing to think of in the future or as you go forward with the pain business being the fastest growing with the highest margin, that's a dynamic that we like moving forward. Okay. I'll ask the proctor back there. If we don't have any further questions, we'll close the session. Thank you very much.
Very good. Thank you.